Now it's time for very serious football talk with the man who met his wife on a blind date, chaperoned by his parents.
They actually came along on the first date with us. That was a...
No!
I rode in the back seat. I was 22.
The man who needs to take a minute to remember the names of all of his children.
Do all of your kids have the same first letter?
No, actually. Let me think. Do any of them? Tucker, Mason, Cole, Isabel, and Lucas.
The man who can defend you in court, but will probably choose not to.
I'll cop to this on a public setting right now. I am an aggressive cuddler in a consensual sense.
Comma, officer.
Good grief, he's a pastor too? When does this guy sleep?
You will find Seth Kaiser everywhere except for in his or your bed, because not only does he not sleep, he's also a faithful husband. So that's important.
It's Seth Kaiser of The Athletic on Almost Entirely Sports.
Our first true off-season Tuesday with Seth Kaiser of the Chief of the North newsletter and of The Athletic and of the Times Ours podcast. New episode there coming tomorrow. Seth, I don't know how you've enjoyed or not enjoyed the fact that we are now in full-on, like, off-season narrative discussion mode. It hit us pretty hard on the show last night. We did about 45 minutes on Mecole Hardman and Sammy Watkins. It was weird. But most importantly, we here in Kansas City just had, you know, a real Minnesotan kind of day yesterday. And
yes,
people at this point, I think, are looking to you to be a guiding light into how we should be handling this cold winter, even as things have warmed up today.
Sure. Well, I saw that you guys, so now you guys have gotten to see, you know, people tend to treat all temperatures pretty similarly once you get into the teens.
Yes.
But that is not true. 0 degrees or let's go, -5 degrees is a lot colder than 15 degrees.
Yes.
And now you guys have gotten to witness the glory that is, because didn't it get down to like -10?
Yeah, I think -7 was the coldest that I saw with my own eyes, but I think there were some negative double digits last night.
Now that is cold.
Yeah.
So here's the funny thing, though, and I couldn't think of a non-convoluted way to tweet this. When you guys were experiencing -7, and this isn't a contest, -7 is very cold. So I'm just providing some foundation here for my expertise. When it was -7 for you guys, we actually hit -35 that night. And so now people, hopefully you see how much colder -5 is than, say, you know, 15 degrees, because that's 20 degrees, right?
Yeah.
Now imagine a little more colder relatively again.
So
and that's where we were at.
Here's some really simple math, but I think it's really, I just did it in my head and it really kind of hit me like a ton of bricks. So I'm guessing this is going to happen for some other people also. So, like, you know, we've been hovering around zero. We've seen a lot of those screenshots that say -0 in weather apps, which has just been kind of funny. Everyone can go outside in zero and go, wow, this is very cold.
It's so cold.
-35 is, again, very simple math here. -35 is the same difference as 35 degrees is away from 70. Think about how differently you dress and behave in 70-degree weather as opposed to 35. Now imagine 35 degrees colder than zero.
And that's where it gets, it's like, that's where things really start freezing. Our washer cord is, or our cord, our cord, the line for water is frozen because it's got an exterior wall there. And that bad boy's not going to melt for another few days. Let me just tell you, there's nothing we can do about
no,
it.
Like, no, you guys are going to have some stinky clothes. That's just it.
We got to go to the laundromat for the first time in a while. I got to tell you, I forgot how expensive the laundromat is.
Interesting.
It is holy crap expensive to go to the laundromat. To be fair, we had like 7 baskets, I think.
Yeah, a lot of laundry.
Because, you know, we it was our entire family and like a week's worth of laundry.
Yeah.
And so, you know, $30 later, we had washed our clothes.
No kidding.
And, yeah.
I think,
no, it's really expensive.
I think I got my washer dryer set for like $100.
Well, and that's
crazy.
The thing is that's how they get you, honestly. That's, someone needs to find like a cheaper washer dryer to sell, like other than a used one, like what you did. Because yeah, it's not worth the price.
No,
but I know for some people, you know, you live in an apartment building without hookups, And sure. It's just a really tough added expense.
Definitely.
So anyway, so that's frozen for us. And now so we've got a space heater there. We're going to try to thaw it out. It probably won't today because it did get above zero today here.
Nice.
For the first time in about 3 weeks.
Oof,
and those, that's when it hurts. Like, that's when it starts to really take a toll on you. Like, even when it's sunny, it's cold. It's just, everything's so cold, and your car won't start ever, and you just it'll take a toll on you. And so the advice that I tried to give, and I tried to like be like a guiding light for people in Kansas City, only to have them like a lot of people respond with a collective, huh?
Yeah, ask the question like you asked me before we started recording here.
Do you know what it means to plug in your car?
In the way that you phrase it, I think in context clues, I have a guess. But I definitely, if someone said, I'm going to go home, plug in my car, and I'll talk to you after I get back, I would stare at them like an alien from another planet.
So you don't see cars driving around with coming from like under their windshield a little bit, or maybe out of their grill, what looks like the end of an extension cord?
No. What?
With like a three prong, like a regular extension cord.
No.
Okay. So in Minnesota, and it's not quite as common as it used to be, although it's still very, very common. A lot of cars come with block heaters, which is just basically a little heater that you put in your engine that you plug in and it runs and it keeps the body of the car a little bit warmer. And that's the only way your car will start. Like, especially if it's outside.
So
like,
you have to, what you're actually charging is the block heater?
Yeah, the
heater.
Oh,
not, that is not
charging.
What I, didn't know that was a thing. Not even close to what I thought. I thought maybe there was like a trickle charger thing. I know what a trickle charger is.
Yeah.
But
that's what I have. Yep. And so that's one thing you can do. The problem with just having a trickle charger attached, which is what I did last night, is that doesn't keep, like, the fluids warmer.
Sure.
It doesn't keep the starter warm. Because one of the problems is your starter gets so cold that it won't start right away. And starters kill your battery very quickly. Well, guess what? When it's cold, your battery's almost dead. And that's a bad combination. So I tried to give people this advice, hey, make sure to plug your car in. And the response I got was like, what are you talking about?
I mean,
and so I felt silly.
No, you sound like you are researching penguin activity in Antarctica, and that this is a cool tip and trick that you've learned. Like, that is. I mean, I've just never heard of that. I mean, I can't really say it any other way, other than that doesn't mean anything to me until just now.
Right, but now you understand, experiencing it now, how cold can just dominate your life. It can be so cold out that it siphons the energy out of you. Because I'm telling you, this is it. This is a Minnesotan telling you, good people of Kansas City, that is cold. -7 is cold. It's cold. It's miserable to be outside in. That is not a suck-it-up temperature.
No.
Once you get below once you get to single digits and then below zero, that's kind of gross. And the negative, it's rough. But help is on the way. But again, keep in mind, again, today, first day above zero in 3 weeks here.
That's insane.
It got up to like seven.
I don't know if you know this, but whenever it really stays that cold forever, the snow just doesn't go anywhere. It just stays there forever. Like I've always really liked snow.
Your snow melts all the time.
Yeah, it melts. I mean, that's the thing. Is like I like snow. I've always liked snow. I was a big, you know, go out and sled kind of kid. I don't know if it's because my birthday is right around Christmas, and that's just always the coolest time of the year for me. I don't know. But I've always been a pro winter. I'm firmly Team Mellinger on this. Like, I would rather it be zero than 100, and that's not even close. But one thing, and this has come around a little bit today. Today the sun came out. It wasn't fully overcast. And so, like, you know, the roads are visible again in most places, which is cool. But the snow's just – there's just been snow on all the grass and everything for, like, a full week with it never going – maybe 2 weeks at this point. And that is weird to me. But I know for you, it's just – there's snow on the ground starting in, like, September.
Correct. Not September. Well, it depends. Some years. 2 years ago, we got our first snow in late September, and we got our last snowstorm of more than a foot in late April.
In April?
So when it was June, We still had snow melting in the church parking lot. It was so bad. That one almost beat me. That winter almost defeated me. And it wasn't too cold a winter. We only had like – so what happens in Minnesota is you get cold snaps, right? Mm-hmm. Where it's usually really, 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 really cold for about 2 or 3 weeks. But you usually know that there's only – or maybe it's only like a week ideally. But there's only one or two of them per winter. The rest of the time it's in the – between the single digits and 20. And that's doable. Like, I can manage that. It's like when you – like the last few weeks – our high was negative 13 a couple days ago. And that just drains the life out of you.
It's just made up.
And so, so tonight, today it got up to 7 degrees. We are going to have a low of negative 18 again. But the next day, the low is only going to be negative 5. And then it's going to – it gets there. And here's the beautiful thing, and you're about to discover this. 20 degrees will feel incredible to you in a couple days. Well, it's gonna feel amazing.
So here's where you're gonna lose absolutely all sympathy. Is Tuesday right now the high is 52, so we're gonna basically beach time on Tuesday.
It's gonna get up to 52 degrees for you on Tuesday.
Our area is very strange. We break over 30 on Friday. 36, 36, 46, 52, 48, 45. It'll probably be negative a jillion in another 2 weeks. But the Kansas-Missouri weather scope is extremely weird.
Yeah, and so, like, here, actually, I'm not even that mad because it looks like next Monday we're going to hit 39 degrees, and that never happens in February. Like,
you get
ever.
A good
so
reset,
we...
a snow reset, that's great.
Yeah, well, it won't be a snow reset because we have too much snow on the ground.
Fair.
Like, it'll... It, like, yeah. A little bit of it will melt. And you got to remember, when it's negative 20 for, like, 3 straight weeks, that is a deep freeze. And so because the ground's frozen, stuff won't melt. Right. So don't be surprised. So you have snow on the ground right now?
Oh, yeah.
Don't be surprised if it takes a little longer to melt because the ground probably froze a little bit.
This has been maybe our most informative segment ever.
I know. Like, it just happens, but I'm telling you, so, like, are you getting up to, like, 20 or 25 tomorrow?
I think tomorrow, I don't think we break 20. Tomorrow, right now, forecast high of 19.
Okay. I'm just saying, wait to see what 19 feels like after what the last couple days have been like. You'll be amazed.
I walked outside to come into the studio today in about 8 or 9 degree weather, and I nearly just took off my gloves. I was like, I don't need these. This is fine. I'm wearing a light sort of hoodie t-shirt and a denim jacket, and I'm toasty. I'm just fine.
It's astonishing how quickly we get used to that stuff. And I agree, this has been easily our most informative segment ever, that half of the people who listen are going to love and the other half are going to loathe beyond all belief.
I think 50% is pretty good. I mean, you've been on Twitter and stuff. Like, if 50% of people love something that you did, that's a pretty good. That's a pretty good ratio. I'll take that. Do you want to?
I don't even think 50% of my followers love me.
No, definitely not. I don't think that 50% of my parents love me.
Well played. That was good.
I'm afraid. I'm so afraid that one of them is listening. I'm nervous about what my phone is going to look like at the end of this segment. I'm not going to look at it until it's over, though. Let me ask you about one thing that is not Super Bowl related here or specifically Chiefs related. In fact, we may take a very, very early break and circle back here because I could feel like this may go a minute. But you really took on Skip Bayless today. And that's something that I know is important to you. I know that you and Skip, you know, agree on like 95% of things, but you finally diverged from your path. Would you like to set that up at all? I know this is important to you.
I would like to think that I am setting a precedent for how people need to respond to Skip Bayless. he tweeted something about, you know, next on Undisputed, et cetera, et cetera.
It was why I'll take Deshaun Watson over Patrick Mahomes now on Undisputed.
Right. And I didn't quote tweet him because everyone thinks of that as like dunking on someone.
No.
Just so you know, when you quote tweet people, that helps engagement numbers.
Yep.
And engagement numbers matter on Twitter.
Yep.
A great deal, actually, if you're trying to sell, you know, whatever. And so I just replied, and I said, no. And that's it. Just no. And no to what? Just no.
No.
it's kind of similar to, you know, the idea of, you know, I was never really a single person in the game, as it were. Mm-hmm. I got married very young, thank goodness. You know, but imagine you're in a, wherever it is young people congregate. You walk up to a gal, guy, whatever, and say, hey, how's it going? And they look at you and go, no. That's such a clear answer. It's like, no to what? Everything.
Yeah.
Just no.
Let's not waste and another's time is, here. Just no. Just keep, you keep moving, I'll keep moving. We're good.
Yeah. Let's all just continue to have a good day and no. And so that's how I'm going to respond to things like that from now on, because it really is unfortunate, some of the narratives that have come from the Super Bowl. And, yeah, that's – so for to me, it's not even worth the time to continually to debunk them one at a time, because at this point, if someone thinks a certain thing about the Super Bowl, they're either a fan of another team and have an axe to grind, or they're just being willfully ignorant.
Yeah. I told you that I could – that I was going to say something positive about Skip Bayless – and I'm gonna go ahead and deliver that here, and then I want to talk about all the narratives and everything. And you've got your Mahomes film breakdown up in the Chief of the North newsletter. Skip Bayless is at this point a finely tuned, purposefully engineered circus clown. It's just what he is. Like, he is just there to tweet why I would rather have the career of Eli Manning than Tom Brady next on Undisputed. He just exists for that, and he makes a lot of money to say dumb things that I don't think he even believes. I don't want to reward him for that. I just sort of respect that he is nothing but a wrestling character that you know, like Stephen A. Smith has wrestling character tendencies, but I think he typically believes what he's saying, and he's just, it's a lot of playing things up for the camera. Skip Bayless is just a troll who makes millions of dollars a year to troll about sports on television. And I have some level of respect for that, even as I largely detest it.
I think that's fair. Yeah, at a certain point, you got to respect the hustle. I don't know if I'd call it hustle, but yeah, it just is what it is. Someone, he found something he's good at.
Yep.
And he's doing it. And I guess here, you know what? If someone looked at me and said, Seth, I want you to offer the most ridiculous, fringy takes as possible for a half hour every day, and we will pay you $1 million a year, look.
Yeah.
I value my integrity, but I would be able to do that without, you know, sacrificing my integrity. I wouldn't be saying I really believe this. I'd just be throwing things out there.
Right.
Would I do it? Of course I would, because my family's much more important to me than my integrity.
And Skip isn't out there telling everybody about all of the magic of Scientology. He's saying dumb stuff about quarterbacks. No one's gonna die because he was wrong about Patrick Mahomes.
Exactly. And so that's it's fair. I get the hustle. And he really has reached a point to where he is even a caricature of what he was,
yes,
10 years ago.
100%.
And I think that's where things can kind of start to come full tilt. What's frustrating is people who pass themselves off as making legitimate analysis that,
yes,
are doing the exact same thing.
Yes. Those are the people that frustrate me even more at this point than your sort of run-of-the-mill, super trolly hot take guy. It's hey, take my opinion seriously. Here's an indefensively bad take. But that's
exactly
a large part of where we're at. And so, I mean, you mentioned that you're not going to try to, like, you're not going to be Don Quixote against the entire bad side of the NFL world to explain that Patrick Mahomes didn't actually play bad football in the Super Bowl. But you also have your breakdown up in the Chief of the North newsletter. I want to talk about your athletic piece in a little bit. But the Mahomes breakdown, again, Chief of the North newsletter, mnchiefsfan.substack.com. It's $12 a year. Forever. You can go get it at mnchiefsfan.substack.com. It's the best value you're going to get in terms of just excellent
value,
Chiefs content delivered to you.
The value might get a little better here in the near future.
What does that mean, Seth? What you should be saying is that I'm going to start charging more in the near future, so get it while
I'm not going to start. I'm not going to start charging more, but, you know, just maybe, I'll tell you what, this will be a teaser for people. Just stay tuned in terms of perhaps what the primary focus of me providing content might be in the future. You know, maybe Maybe something will happen. I don't know. Who's to say? Josh, I'm not God. I don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. So you can just go ahead and stop grilling me on things that I probably shouldn't have said.
I'm just glad that you said on the radio in a recorded form that you're not God, because I've been trying to get some sort of evidence of that from you for a very long time. So that's worth it on its own. But you can check it out, Chief of the North newsletter, mnchiefsfan.substack.com, S-U-B-S-T-A-C-K, or you can follow Seth on Twitter and find it at @realmnchiefsfan on Twitter. Talk to me about the Mahomes breakdown. What was the part of it that on second watch you went, oh, you know what? That was better or worse than I expected. What did you go through? And you go, okay, that right there, that popped and didn't pop in real time.
Sure. Here's what I would say. The first thing is that one of the impetuses for writing it is there were a lot of takes flying around after the Super Bowl. The general opinion was that Mahomes did everything he could in the face of a lot going wrong. And what I would say is, upon reviewing every snap and charting it the same way I have for, I think, man, I want to say the last 7 years I've done this for Chiefs quarterbacks.
Wow.
You know, charting happy feet snaps, accurate versus inaccurate throws, missed reads, flushes where you're immediately put under pressure. And I here's what I would say. The broadcast did not do justice to how well Mahomes played under just the most god-awful of circumstances. And that's what's fascinating to me, is I wanted to examine, because there were a few voices among the crowd that was, well, no, Mahomes was, and this is, you know, mostly fans of opposing teams, but you hear the people, Mahomes wasn't taking his checkdowns. Look, I reviewed the film. If anyone wants to argue that with me at some point on air, Josh, please give them some kind of forum to talk, because I will go through with them. Show me these plays. Because show it to me.
You can DM me at JB Briscoe.
Yeah, you can DM Josh at JB Briscoe. Show me these plays. And don't just show me one and say, see? No. I need you to chart every play. Tell me how happened it happened. Because if it happened two or three times, I've got news for you. Every quarterback misses a couple, usually between 1 to 4 a game, depending on the quarterback. Mahomes misses less than most. And by the way, in terms of missed shots, as in actual missed, open reads that he should have seen that were viable options prior to pressure, you want to know how many of those I charted?
I would love to know.
Zero.
Wow.
None.
Wow.
Zip. Absolutely nada. And the thing of it is I go into these things intending on grading harsh. I actually charted Mahomes as a missed throw the first drive. McCole Hardman could have hit McCole deep. I had a bunch of people DM me basically saying, well, hey, but McCole slowed down. I said, yeah, but I try to grade these harshly because otherwise, you know, fanhood can come into play and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the deal. What I did was I compared his numbers, you know, created yards, multiple read snaps, his accuracy in and out of the pocket, number of plays he was flushed, how many drops cost him, and it wasn't just drops. We'll get back to that in a second. Potential interceptions, that sort of thing. Who was to blame on his interceptions? What happened on these plays? I compared it to his 2018 numbers, charting the same thing. He actually played a little bit better by the standards that I utilize, which isolate quarterback play mm-hmm. from everything else. He played a little better than he did in his average game in 2018. We just saw the limit of what great quarterback play can do. I never thought there was a limit. I really didn't. I had swung so far in the opposite direction that I really thought quarterback play could conquer everything.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But here's the deal. Quarterback play can conquer terrible protection. It can. Although you reach a point where it gets so god-awful that it's tough to do that. And by tough, I mean almost impossible. One thing quarterback play cannot overcome is people not catching the ball.
Yeah.
And that was rough.
Yeah.
And so I charted, and this is just run-of-the-mill drops. Not run-of-the-mill. They would have been good catches.
Sure.
But, and everyone knows this by now. You know, you got the horizontal to the field throw. Look, I rewound it, looked at multiple angles, everything. That ball got in there before the defender got there. That
Absolutely.
Was not a potential pick because he put so much velocity on it while horizontal. It was a ridiculous throw. So did Tyreek, same thing. The defender did not have a shot at that.
Yeah.
It was an incredible throw. First half. They lost two touchdowns, and they lost another crucial first down on a third down to plain drops. There were another six plays where Chiefs receivers allowed the ball to get batted down where they really should have been at least a 50-50 ball in terms of, like, boxing them out. Mm-hmm. And one happened on a third and long with Tyreek Hill on that interception. Basically, Mahomes made an incredible play, got pressured immediately, goes to his right, makes an unbelievable throw down the field over the top of the underneath defender, and Hill allowed the guy, rather than jumping up, high-pointing it, boxing out, Hill allowed the defender to reach around him. I mean, he arrived a half second early and made contact, but it's not like the refs were calling pass interference or holding any other point in the game.
No,
so,
it wasn't a ticky-tack game by any means. We can at least all agree on that.
And look, the Chiefs got blown out, so the refs, they were rendered irrelevant by that. But, I mean, it was a garbage non-call considering some of the other stuff they did. But Hill still could have boxed him out and didn't. So the ball got knocked down and right into the hands of a defender. That, statistically, goes against Mahomes.
Yeah.
And you've got people saying, well, he threw two picks.
Yeah.
But the reality is it wasn't on him. The last-minute pick to Kelce where he had to make a play, I mean, this was... You had to. It was a 50-50 ball, and Kelce allowed Devin White to just out-muscle him to the ball and knock him aside.
Yep.
And those, you know, the game was over at that point. But as I went through this, we found the limit of what quarterbacks can beat. I charted 29 flushes. And when I say a flush, that's not just a – think of it as a quarterback pressure, but also within the context of a pressure that occurs before the quarterback could reasonably get the ball out. Because if there's pressure that's like at the last second and the quarterback just gets the ball, I don't count that.
Right, he's not flushed out, sure.
Correct. And so it was, we got to see the limit of what the Chiefs could do. And that's largely what I wrote about, was just to provide, and if anyone wants to look this up, I actually made this one unlocked because I think it's important that people understand what quarterback analysis should look like. And I don't mean like, oh, I do it better than anyone else. I don't. I just do it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm the bare minimum of what should be done. What really should be done is someone a lot smarter than me, who knows the game a lot better than me, should be charting every snap. And that's what the good ones do.
Mm-hmm.
But it should be, you shouldn't be saying, oh, well, you know, he was missing open receivers. Tell me where.
Yeah.
And let's examine it. And that's my biggest grief with some of the things I've seen about Mahomes post-Super Bowl. And it hasn't been everywhere, but it's been in some places, where they're saying he did things that when you watch the film, they're just not there.
Yeah.
And that, to me, it's somewhere between lazy and dishonest.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know where on the line it lands.
Yeah, because my inclination is to be like, so why do you think that's happening? But it's also not really up to you to answer because you've got the better example. It's just frustrating. It's frustrating that that's what generally passes as if not good analysis, at least acceptable analysis. What I will say, then maybe you can give an answer on that is sort of within the realm of what you've actually looked at here, is do you have anything in terms of why it went that poorly in all of the places surrounding Mahomes? The offensive line, I understand being overmatched, but do you even have a working theory as to why the pass catchers had their worst games collectively all at the same time? Why it was so difficult for some of those guys to apparently get open with any consistency, acknowledging that the clock there gets sped up whenever there's pressure, obviously, at least for that part.
Sure.
What is that? I don't know. What's your best guess on some of that stuff?
So in terms of, you know, oh, man, how to say this without – in terms of how things go, for one, both Kelce and Hill just didn't have their best games.
Yeah.
In terms of contested catches. And by contested, I'm talking about the type of catches they normally make.
Mm-hmm.
Both of them had a bad day there.
Yeah.
The Chiefs receivers did not do a great job handling the physicality of the Buccaneers.
Mm-hmm.
But they also – the game plan was not designed to beat – what the Buccaneers did.
Yeah.
The Buccaneers ran a lot of cover two and cover four type looks, and they were really aggressive up front and then kept everything in front of them and swarmed to the ball to contest strong, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, one way you can beat that is just by simply making the contested catches,
mm-hmm.
which the Chiefs had at least a half dozen opportunities to do, some of which would have been big plays, like really, really big plays. And again, that's not including just the flat out drops, right? If that goes another way, you're talking a very different game. And that's just one thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you had that go wrong, and then it is intertwined with the offensive line stuff. The offensive line was beaten as thoroughly as any line I've ever seen in any game. And it's tough to game plan around that, especially when the opponent knows that they can do it. and they can do it with just their front four, which means their linebackers can cheat for screens and for other short throws that you generally would use to try to combat pressure. And so it just there's no game plan for we can't block them,
yeah,
is how Chris Brown phrased it.
Yeah.
And that's a really great way of thinking about it, is it's hard to game plan around we literally can't block them. We can't do it. There's a reason why people don't say, you know, when regular college teams are facing Alabama, well, you know, why aren't they scheming up better protection? It's like, well, because even when it's seven blocking those four, they still can't block them. And now they only have three guys running routes against seven guys in coverage.
Yep.
And so the Chiefs, it's not like they never tried to bring in help, mm-hmm, to protect, but when they did, the Bucs didn't bite. They still kept seven guys back in coverage, and they just flooded any area. They bracketed guys. They just didn't allow for it. They played really, really well.
Yeah.
That, I mean, that's another thing. They've got a good secondary, but the Chiefs have beaten better secondaries. They had a game plan that looked like it was largely designed to beat man coverage, to test the field deep. It just wasn't – they really – I've only seen Andy Reid out-schemed and out-game planned a handful of times. But it's not like it's never happened. We actually just watched, you know, an Atlanta game where the Chiefs shot themselves in the foot quite a bit too.
Yeah.
But the Atlanta played a really good game. And so I would just say it was a combination of they just didn't play well, even and when they got open. So when you don't play well, it reduces the percentage of times that you get open, right?
Mm-hmm.
And when the offensive line isn't playing well, it reduces the percentage of times that there's time for people to get open. And suddenly the Venn diagram isn't matching up as often as it is, you know, times where they get open, times where the blocking is there. Normally for the Chiefs, you know, that Venn diagram is like 80%. Whereas here, It was at virtually zero.
Yeah.
And that's where Mahomes had to run around and attempt to make miracles. So I don't know if that explains it pretty well, like an idea of a Venn diagram. But when your percentages of times that good things are happening get smaller and smaller for each individual event, the odds of them overlapping and creating a good play become exponentially smaller.
This is not your fault in any way whatsoever, but it's such an unsatisfying explanation. Just because,
I know.
Just because it's not, that's not supposed to happen with this team, and it basically never happens. You mentioned the Atlanta game, and that's, I think, a fair comp. But to just say, like, yeah, the coach that we all know is really, really good, he got out-schemed, and this offense that we know is really, really good pretty much had its worst game everywhere except for quarterback, and then the quarterback couldn't succeed with no offensive line or receiving help. So that's what happened. Like, I mean, I've said this now 50 times in some form or another, where I think that it was extremely surprising and extremely frustrating, but it wasn't complicated, just the way that everything sort of fell apart there. It's just frustrating because if it was, at least if it was complicated, we could theorize some. We could try to make the most of it, and it's just, nope.
Right.
It's just frustrating at every turn. One thing that you kind of alluded to that you went into more detail on in your piece on The Athletic right now is about speed on defense. And you wrote a little bit about both defensive units and specifically both groups of linebackers. But just since we're at least kind of in this realm at the moment, can you explain a little more, expand a little more on what the Buccaneers linebackers were doing in this game that created more problems that I feel like have maybe gotten a little bit overlooked? You mentioned like the screens, you know, that they Mahomes should have had or whatever that simply didn't exist.
Sure. So the Buccaneers linebackers, they played a great game. They've talked – well, Levante David hasn't really. Devin White has talked a lot of stuff since the game.
Mm-hmm.
So good on him, you know, have your fun. Them's the rules,
yep,
right? You win, you get to say crap. That's
yep,
how it works. So their linebackers are extremely fast. And Levante David is one of the best in the business. He's not just fast. He's instinctual, hits hard, covers well, great player. Devin White hasn't been very good in coverage this year, but he is very fast.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a lot of range, which means he can take away certain short routes across the middle of the field without sacrificing the ability to pursue to the sideline. The Chiefs really like to test teams horizontally, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so a few of those early plays, and in my opinion, they still didn't do enough of them, where they were running some sweeps and that sort of stuff. those are the plays that were gaining them, you know, chunk yards in the playoffs, right? Mm-hmm. 20, 30, 40 yards. Against the Buccaneers, it was 6 or 7. And part of that is the speed of pursuit. That's something, if you've got a couple linebackers that can pursue very, very well, you turn 20-yard gains into 7-yard gains. And people might look at that 7-yard gain and say, wow, that's a negative play. But it matters that it's not a big play.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And it's a similar thing with safeties. You and I have often talked about this. A safety's job, among many other things, but it's, you know, the biggest one, the safety in the back end, is to take bad moments and make them either not bad or not worse, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, man, that was still a 30-yard play. Well, but because of a terrific tackle, it wasn't a 70-yard touchdown.
Yep.
Those things matter, and the NFL often turns on big plays. And for the Chiefs' offense, it's often turned on big plays. And so their inability to make some of those big plays happen sideline to sideline. Now, again, the Chiefs didn't call enough of those, in my opinion, in part because they could help slow down the pass rush.
Mm.
But even the ones they did call, some of those sweeps, some of those looks to the sideline, they weren't able to get the same yardage and the same ground there that they've gotten. And that's largely due to the fact that you've got really fast sideline to sideline linebackers who I think fit the modern NFL better than your traditional thumper types. And I think the Chiefs can take a lesson there, especially with how Tom Brady and company attacked the middle of the field, specifically avoiding Tyrann Mathieu. They didn't really, like, people can talk about the receivers and the Chiefs cornerbacks, you know, not having a lot of names there. But it's not like the Patriots, or the Patriots, every time.
Every time.
Every time.
Look, you made it 35 minutes into this segment before you did it, so.
It's not like the Buccaneers receivers had these huge days.
No.
You know, they drew some important penalties. I guess if you want to count that, fair enough.
I'm going to give you the numbers on this, cuz I went and I did the ding dang math, yep. And I wanted at least, for all the things that I did have to eat absolute dookie on after this game, I'm not going to accept it on this one, because it honestly, like you said, the Chiefs corners in this game and the secondary really did all right. The Chiefs allowed a total of 8 receptions for 62 yards to the Buccaneers wide receivers. Gronk had 6 for 67. Now, you want to add Breland on Evans pass interference, that's fine. Snead was the one that got cooked on that long Gronk touchdown. But 8 for 62 for Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, and Antonio Brown, I'll take it. Yeah, thanks.
Yep, absolutely. And these are important things to note. And so the thing that they kept testing, though, was the middle of the field. They were avoiding Tyrann Mathieu, and they were specifically attacking, and they did a great job with play designs. They had some tendency breakers where they were running the ball a little differently than they normally do. Their play action stuff was top notch, but they were attacking Ben Neiman and Dan Sorensen in the middle of the field.
Mm-hmm.
And Sorensen,
and who could have seen that coming, Seth? Who could have seen that coming?
Well, and Sorensen's an easy guy to pick on. I view him as a more valuable member of the defense than Ben Neiman. We'll see what they decide to do with him. I would bet you most things that the Chiefs will keep Dan Sorensen around, and the fan base is going to revolt, and he'll play pretty well next year again, and everyone can relax.
Yep.
The problem is he does have some limitations with sideline-to-sideline speed.
Yep.
Ben Neiman has some limitations with sideline-to-sideline speed. Anthony Hitchens, who also Chiefs fans, barring a miracle, is not going anywhere. The team likes him much more than you do. I guess and he's actually played pretty well. Like, I didn't notice him get particularly brutalized in the Super Bowl, and he played really well in the playoffs. So we'll see how he does. But they really missed Willie Gay Jr., and they really need, in my opinion, and I don't think it's going to happen unless they alter Sorensen's role a little bit next year, they need to either have Sorensen on the field less. They need a missile. They need someone who flies around the field. Tyrann Mathieu's a great player, but he's not necessarily, you know, ever since his ACL tear, he doesn't fly around the field at quite the same speed as he once did. Mm. Great safety, but he is not a missile all over the field, and he can't cover the entire field. The Chiefs were asking their cornerbacks to be the sideline-to-sideline tacklers, and the problem is if you leave a hole in the middle of the field that you're not fast enough to cover, that's problematic.
Yeah.
And so it's not quite that simple, and that's unfair to Neiman and Sorensen, who take way more of the blame than they should, because it's not quite that simple. Chiefs weren't getting a lot of pressure. The scoreboard really affected that game. You know, you end up at 21-6, and suddenly the Patriots, the Buccaneers, can threaten play action legitimately every snap, and you have to respect it. It's a whole different ballgame. But really, the Chiefs aren't as fast at the second level as I would like to see when they have Neiman and Sorensen in there with those dime looks. And I think you could see with the Buccaneers how valuable speed can be on defense.
Let me get one sort of big picture thing out, and then we'll get you out of here, Seth. You take all of those things. If people want to read more about Mahomes, Chief of the North newsletter, you want to read more about the Chiefs or the defensive speed thing, and of course also the Mahomes and kind of the limitations of the things around him. That's up in The Athletic, a little two lessons learned thing from Seth up there. If I was going to have you pick anything, not necessarily something we've even talked about here today, but anything where you're like, you know what, I might allow myself to overreact based on something that I saw in the Super Bowl a little bit, if I'm gonna, or maybe it's just something that moves the needle and you're not even willing to say I'm gonna overreact there, but something you will take away from the Super Bowl that will stick with you through the rest of the offseason in the moves the Chiefs will ultimately make this offseason. Is there something that comes to mind first and you say, you know what, that there is actually a bigger problem in for the long haul, not just something that showed up in the Super Bowl?
Sure. It's the obvious one. It's the offensive line. And it's not because they didn't invest in it. They did. But the guys got hurt. Their highly paid guys were Schwartz and Fisher and LDT. And none of them were playing in the Super Bowl.
Yep.
And so the problem is, I know Mitch Schwartz has said some stuff on Instagram that was pretty encouraging, like saying he wants to be back next year and, you know, is looking forward to that. So that's encouraging. But there's still a lot of questions that exist with regards to his future. Eric Fisher tore his Achilles in the AFC Championship. It takes a long time to come back from that.
Yeah.
And so I think the offensive line is definitely something that they need to be really thinking about. I understand they'll get Lucas Niang back. They'll get LDT back, odds are. But, you know, he's going to be a year off football, et cetera, et cetera. Assembly tore two tendons. They really don't have a ton of depth anymore. They had a bunch of guys that, you know, they were comfortable with in limited spots, but not starting. I think they should really try to invest hard in the offensive line. I have ideas for it. I especially, you know, if you can convince just one guy to go ring hunting, it could make everything look different for the Chiefs. But I would invest very hard in offensive line. The other thing, I'll give you a twofer, because it's not overreacting to say a few things went wrong. The other one is that, you know, Hardman, Pringle, Robinson, they were not able to step in when a team was just going nuts trying to defend Hill and Kelsey. In the past, Watkins has been a guy that stepped in fairly consistently when he's healthy, but he can't stay healthy. Either Hardman needs to take a big step forward next year, or they need to find another guy that they're confident in beating physical looking coverages and really just being able to step in at a moment's notice. And so, because they just didn't have that for the most part. And I think that's oversimplifying, but they did try to get Hardman going a few times and it just didn't work.
I got nervous for a second because I was worried that you weren't going to have the right answer, but then you said, I'm going to give you a twofer, and then you got the correct answer. There you go. Gold star, green check mark. You passed. Congratulations. That was the correct answer.
Oh, see, now here's the thing, though. This just so happens to be a draft that is just filthy with good young playmakers.
Absolutely embarrassed and, with them. Yes, I'm very much on board for this. Yes.
Right, and so I know there's a lot of people that want the Chiefs to do things to address the defense. Don't let the Chiefs' defense is pretty decent this year.
Yeah.
And I'm confident in Spagnuolo. They had a rough performance in the Super Bowl. Low key, they did everything they could to keep the Chiefs in that game in the first half.
Yeah.
Really did.
If the offense would have played well, we would not be talking about anything other than maybe trying to upgrade off of Ben Neiman, and that dude's probably on the roster already in Willie Gay. I mean,
Yes, that's correct. Yeah. And Hitchens isn't going anywhere.
Nope.
So I think they've got the pieces in place defense. I would love to see them, like in my dream offseason, they convince Trent Williams to go ring shopping.
I would like that.
And then they draft a guy. Now, would that require some insane calisthenics with the salary cap? Yes, it would. Do I have a lot of faith that Brett Veach could do that? Yes, I do. And that's no denigration, by the way, to Schwartz or Fisher. It's just I don't know if they'll be available. And so you might as well maybe go try to grab the guy that just played at an all-pro level who just so happens to have never really played for a super competitive team outside of 1 year.
Seth, we got to go. Thank you for your time, as always. I look forward to doing this again tomorrow when we'll do an episode of Time's Ours tomorrow afternoon. If people want to hear more from you, me, and our beloved colleague, Nate Taylor, you want to check out more from Seth, check out his piece on The Athletic, The Chief in the North newsletter, mnchiefsfan.substack.com. Maybe we'll get more into some off-season plans and whatnot next week, Seth. But in the meantime, thank you so very much for being here. And now you say your thing.
Thank you for having me, Josh.
Beautiful, 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 beautiful.
This is Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe.
Thank you, Braze McFly, for your efforts today. I can't say your input, but your effort was good.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Thanks again to Seth Kaiser for joining us, as he does every week. The least you could do is do yourself a favor and check out the Chief of the North newsletter. I honestly, back from the beginning of our conversation, do not know what he was teasing there, where he said he may have said too much and that there's something else that's going to add to the value. I usually would like to think that I know what is going on behind the scenes with Seth. I do not know what he is referring to. And I'm both excited about it and preemptively angry about it, because he's going to give it away for too cheap a price. Just for less than it is actually worth. But I'm excited to see what it's going to be. I don't know. I've got a couple of, like, guesses, but they would just be guesses. So, interested to see what happens there. Also, his piece in The Athletic is really good. And we got a Times Ours coming tomorrow afternoon. We'll get back on the mic with myself and Seth and Nate Taylor. Right now, Phoenix Suns just obliterating the Brooklyn Nets. And I'll say full strength Brooklyn Nets, favorites out of the East Brooklyn Nets, potentially an NBA Finals preview right now. I got all that right, Beards?
Yeah, for the most part.
The Nets don't have Durant or Kyrie, but who's to say that they'll have them, you know, in the Finals? Suns are going to have... They're going to have Booker and Chris Paul and DeAndre Ayton and Mikal Bridges and Jay Crowder. And you're getting good Dario Saric minutes again. You love to see it. I'm enjoying it very much. I won't do play-by-play for the last 7 minutes of the show, but I am going to enjoy the fact that that's happening on the screen in front of me. There are a couple of things that Seth mentioned there that I did want to circle back on, and... that I thought we may eventually talk about in today's show, and I guess we'll get to it here right at the very, very, very end. But I really do feel like there are at least two really good and correct answers to the question that I ended with Seth there on about what are you willing to overreact on from the Super Bowl? And I keep framing it that way because the Chiefs made it back to the Super Bowl. To the idea that they've, like, got to do some sort of major overhaul is, of course, a little bit of an overreaction. But if you say, hey, what's something that I'm going to put an outsized amount of emphasis in because it went poorly in the Super Bowl? Like, the secondary, as we talked about, the quarterback play, I think, was pretty good. I am still relatively, I never learn. Relatively worried about them being able to have enough talent at their cornerback positions next season, in large part because I don't know if Bashaud Breeland's going to be back. And so what I'm really worried about is, you know, where is DeAndre Baker going to be with his broken leg, and what's his timetable for his return? And is Rashad Fenton a guy that you can trust on the outside? Or if not, do you kick Snead out to the outside and put Fenton back in the slot? Well, do you have a fourth guy? This team plays a lot. You know, all of that stuff, those aren't things I'm worried about because of the Super Bowl. Those aren't magnified by the Super Bowl in my mind. The offensive line and the wide receivers were absolutely magnified in the Super Bowl in a very negative way. I don't know if it's going to be a free agent, if it's going to be someone from the draft class, or if it's going to be, as Matt Derrick last night kind of put his guess out there on, if it's going to be the return of Sammy Watkins and then somebody in a mid to late round draft pick situation that maybe fills out the receiver room a little bit. You give Mecole Hardman you just give him more time. Again, I don't really think there's anything they can do at this point, other than wait it out, but you can at least give him another go. But I really do hope that they add somebody
who you can trust to do the things that you thought you could trust Sammy Watkins to do whenever he was out there. And again, I mean, it's not his fault, but the dude just isn't. You can't be confident that he's going to be available. It's just that at this point, it's more than a coincidence. It's more than a series of, I mean, I guess technically it might still be a series of very bad coincidences, but it's somewhere in there you got to think something unfortunate has happened in terms of just Sammy Watkins' continual health concerns. I don't know what the logic would be. I don't know if he was on the TB12 diet, if he'd be out there every snap. I have no idea. But it's really hard to think I can trust Sammy Watkins to be the guy that's beating those one-on-one matchups whenever Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce are getting doubled like crazy because he just wasn't there this year. The offensive line, I think, is relatively obvious. Something that that we'll talk probably more about later in the week. No show tomorrow night. Got a KU game here on 810, but we'll be back on Thursday. Something that I imagine we'll talk about later in the week is basically kind of cheating off of Nate Taylor's homework that he has in his story that went up on The Athletic today as well. Looking at the guys that are going to hit free agency from the Chiefs roster and try to predict kind of who ends up where. I do think that if they end up re-signing Austin Ryder and Kelechi Osemele and LDT comes back, I do think that there is Mike Remmers, if they re-sign Mike Remmers. I do think there is a path to have a relatively solid offensive line that is automatically better off than even the Super Bowl offensive line was without even adding anyone new just because you've got health back. I don't know what Kelechi Osemele's timeline is going to be. I really don't know about Eric Fisher's timeline. Osemele got hurt really early in the year. Obviously, Fisher got hurt in the AFC Championship game, so I'm nervous about him. Really no idea about Mitchell Schwartz, if he's going to be back, he's going to retire. I don't know. But even if you expect, let's say you expect Osemele to come back and look more or less like he did at the beginning of this year, but the tackles aren't back at that point, You could build an offensive line that has Duvernay Tardif, Austin Ryder, and Kelechi Osemele in the middle with Nick Allegretti and then really even Mike Remmers as being depth options behind them there. That's pretty all right. That's okay. It's not remarkable. You're going to have the same interior offensive line issues that you had in week whatever, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. The tackles are a little bit up in the air. You've got Lucas Niang coming back. You've got Mike Remmers. You probably need to do something else. If you have Remmers playing right tackle, or if you think Niang can be, it's not an absolute abject disaster like it ended up being this year. Andrew Wiley will also be in the mix. He's a restricted free agent. I expect him to be back as well. It just, I do think that's the place where you've got a magnifying glass on that position in its absolute worst state in the biggest possible game. It's going to require some tinkering, but I'm not sure that it's completely disposable at this point. I hope Osemele is healthy. He was a lot of fun whenever he was still out there for the Chiefs. Thanks to Seth Kaiser. Thanks to Sterling Holmes alongside Rudy Salazar and Beers McFly. I'm Joshua Briscoe. Follow all of our various streams and Twitters and whatnot. You'll see whenever we're back, but it'll be Thursday night at 7 o'clock. Until then, bye, Mom.
You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe on Sports Radio 810 WHB.